Welcome to the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson and Barton Simmons. The ultimate insider's guide from signing day to the national championship game and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast.
As we sit here recording on Friday morning, December 22nd, we are hours away from the conclusion of the first ever early signing period. Barton Simmons, my illustrious co-host here on the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast, but also the National Director of Scouting for 24/7 Sports for a long time. So, Barton, this is you're coming down the stretch here. Any instant reactions? I felt like, by the way, I thought that you and Steve really got us started on a good note. I really appreciate the effort and the energy, and obviously on 24/7 Sports through the week. As it's coming to a close, maybe even like from a behind the scenes perspective, before we get into the biggest storylines, like, do you think that do you have any big picture thoughts on the way this first ever signing period went?
I think that Georgia could have given us some indication that something really unique is being constructed there. I think that the way they closed, the way they secured the state, the way they stole commits from Bama and beat the rest of the SEC for guys that we weren't even sure that they were going to sign or land at this point. Like, I'm really starting to wonder, you know, how quickly this is going to get rolling for Georgia and how special this might be. Because, look, they're already in the playoffs.
Right, because it's like, you know, how quickly this could get rolling for Georgia. It's like, this is a team that just won the SEC championship.
Right, right. And so what I mean by get rolling is like doing Alabama stuff. Mm. Where they are every year in the playoff hunt. Every year they're in Atlanta. And so that's been by my biggest takeaway is they're doing things that we're used to seeing Nick Saban do. And so I'm very intrigued by the budding power that Georgia appears to be, because when you look at how they're building it, offensive line, starting a freshman and a redshirt freshman this year, running back, quarterback, defense, another loaded group of offensive linemen this year, the best running back in the country again, the best quarterback in the country again, another really talented defensive group. Like, they're building this with a really strong foundation. They got a great identity. Georgia is, in my opinion, the state of Georgia is the best state in the country for football talent right now. All these things is very much a perfect storm that it looks as though Kirby is a good enough coach to corral and channel. So, this has been Georgia's week where they really have flexed their muscles.
I want to throw this out, and it's like probably a combination of things, but it felt like as Georgia is surging, and you mentioned about how, you know, this is almost like making Alabama moves, the kind of things you expect from Nick Saban. The one of the sort of narratives throughout the early signing day and, you know, the early signing period also is that, we didn't necessarily see an Alabama or an Ohio State. Is it possible? Like, I'm programmed from the last, 4 or 5 years that on National Signing Day, on that first Wednesday in February, that is a spot where you see Alabama and Ohio State cleaning up. Is there anything about the early signing period that has put Alabama, and again, we're talking about Ohio State, number one class in the country right now, but is there anything about the change in the schedule or the change in the format that has created a kind of disadvantage to what has been the recruiting power who gets their pick of the litter?
Yes, but if you're going to say that there's a disadvantage for Alabama, I mean, the same disadvantage is in place for Georgia. In the sense
that Georgia's kind of an upstart. Like, I was almost thinking that they were the class, like Ohio State and Alabama have been the class of recruiting. Like, they have been the ones, like, they get all of their final picks. They get to probably keep working on all these guys till the very, very end. And that, you know, there's something about being the trendy, the rising stock, maybe, that gives, especially in this first early signing period, that is maybe added to the shift of power that was already in place with Kirby Smart and the staff.
Yeah, I think Georgia's riding something for sure. For them to come out of, you know, relative obscurity. Obscurity is the wrong word, but for them to sort of flash into this playoff team this year is I think right time, right place to ride this wave. But at the same time, ultimately what the late signing periods provides, or the February signing period provides, is an opportunity for at the end of the process, when you understand what your board looks like, you can start going and picking people off, and you can build some momentum. And I think that Georgia, for whatever reason, has been able to, their message is resonating right now and getting these guys to sign early. And Alabama's recruiting these guys too. And I think Alabama throughout this process has been, I do think we're finally seeing maybe they'd be a little victim of their own success a little bit. I mean, how are you going to convince a five-star to sign up for that wide receiver core? How are you going to convince a five-star to come in and play behind Tua? I mean, I guess Georgia, Georgia got Justin Fields, but he's an in-state guy. So you sort of, that's your ace in the hole there. Alabama didn't have an ace in-state five-star quarterback. So I just think that is what Georgia, the opportunity Georgia has is that's the best state in the country right now. And Georgia is now the team in that state. So, I mean, there's disadvantages, but, don't cry for Ohio State. They're still number two.
Right.
And Alabama's still number six, but it's just not they're not dominating and bullying people right now like we're used to seeing them.
That's, do you think that is something that we will see continue? You know, it's tough because, I did not make much out of the story behind Jackson Carman, five-star, number one offensive tackle in the country from Cincinnati. You know, Clemson went out and got him out of Ohio from Ohio State. He was also considering USC. When he told a reporter, a local Ohio-based reporter, that Dabo Swinney in the recruitment process had mentioned that Urban Meyer might be on the back end of his career. Did you make anything of that?
No.
Okay, all right. I didn't either. But that's not the point that I'm getting to. The point that I was getting to is this: are we seeing a shift in power where just like, you know, the 5, 7, 10 year, you know, these things cannot continue forever? When you say victim of their own success, do you sense on the recruiting trail that there is a little bit less dominance from Ohio State and Alabama from Urban Meyer and Nick Saban?
Well, I just think that Alabama's had seven straight number one classes.
Right. It couldn't have continued forever.
And not only that, but now I think we're about to enter a period in which we're finally going to have like competition at the top again. I think Georgia is showing they can sign a number one class. Ohio State can sign a number one class. Alabama can sign a number one class. I would expect Jimbo Fisher to generate some sort of momentum at A&M. I just think James Franklin at Penn State, Tom Herman at Texas, Dabo, we know what he can do at Clemson. Like if he has 25 spots, I mean, they're probably the favorite to have the number one class. Like, I think that there is a new level of recruiting competition, and that it feels new. Like, I know that there's still been powerhouses that Alabama has topped in the recruiting world before, but it feels new on that front in terms of the level, the number of teams that can truly compete for that top recruiting class. And if that's legit, then Alabama is no longer just drafting teams, then that could spell a less dominant period for them. Not that they won't be competing for championships, but I'm just, you know, it's been Alabama and everybody else. And I could see a little more parity creep in with the way Georgia, Ohio State, and a couple of the other teams are recruiting.
When you pulled together some numbers to back this up, I can pull them up if you don't have them in front of you. But what was the final count based on your estimation in terms of how many of the top prospects or how many prospects decided that they were going to go ahead and sign here in this early signing period versus the ones who are going to hold out for February?
Yeah, the number as of yesterday, which was as we're talking on Friday, the number as of Thursday was 79.8% of committed kids went ahead and signed, and 65 and change percent of the kids, the general population of the recruiting class, signed. And so that's
significant. You
know, that's significant. And if you've been listening to me, that's the number I was projecting. Like, hey, I think about 80% are going to sign. And yeah, like I do also think, I wonder if that is sort of the now number moving forward indefinitely that's going to sign in December, or whether we see kids start to maybe see their own their own leverage points, see their own value, see their own ability to hold out, and maybe see that number decline a little bit. I would assume that number is more likely to decline than it will to creep up, because I still think that a lot of kids are going to look at this and say, a lot of kids are going to look at this January period and see some kind of scrub relative to them and see how much attention they're getting. And they'll say, well, shoot, I could have held off and I would have been the guy that everyone was recruiting. So we're going to see that 20% that's left over, or I guess that 35% that's left over, is about to be they're going to be the toast of the town.
So when Solomon Tuiapapu is getting all the attention here in January, they're just going to be like, damn, it could have been me.
Well, I don't know about him, because he was probably going to get attention anyways.
I was trying to pull. I was like, what's the best name I can pull from the top 50 right here? All right, so yeah, I just was doing a quick scan. So it looks like about, and some of these guys, like Terrace Marshall, is going to be Friday night, right, this afternoon.
Right.
So we'll be getting him in a little bit. So it's about like 10 of the top 40. Which is not insignificant. It is, you know, it's still a decent amount of players. But man, when you're looking at the list on the 24/7 Sports player rankings, a lot of logos out here beside these names that have signed. It's something that was pretty funny, because the conversation among coaches going into it has almost changed depending on how your haul was. Like, I was hearing some coaches that were like, "Oh, I hated it until we got this awesome class, and now I realize how many more hours I have in January."
Right. But all that's going to do now for them, freeze up their January, yes. But what's they're not going to sit at home. They're not going to just hang out with their family instead. They're going to be on the road recruiting, and they're going to be recruiting class of 2019 kids, class of 2020 kids, and they're going to further accelerate this recruiting process. And now they're going to get those kids on campus in the spring for official visits, which is a new rule, and just continue pacing towards that early signing period for 2018. So it's a vicious cycle. It's not like this like lets them off the hook. It makes it a little less stressful in January, but it doesn't, you know, they still got to get
great.
Working.
Nah, great point. Silly me for thinking that a college football coach who's been wired to like have an insane January already is going to look at all this free time and try to use it to spend it on something other than bettering his football program. Like, the muscle memory is already there on what you're doing. Like Georgia just dance on everyone as they're signing 6-5 stars and also sending out scholarship offers to the class of 2019.
Yeah, and I mean, Kirby Smart's his mouth's watering just thinking about like what a great jump start he's going to get on that 2019 class. Like, it's going to be full steam ahead.
All right, first year coaches. You know, there's a lot of different cases. You know, each coach faced their own challenges. You know, Florida State, for example, not a very big class. What was it, 7 or 8? You know, just less than 10 players. But so I mean, good players, But it was almost like a, you know what Florida State's, and it's funny because Willie Taggart, of course, had the background as an assistant there. But I was looking at Florida State's class and I thought it was Stanford-esque, you know, where it's like small class, but pretty good players at most of the positions. So whether it's Willie Taggart at Florida State, Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M, Scott Frost at Nebraska, you know, all the first-year coaches faced different scenarios. What stood out to you?
Well, I felt like, you know, one of the programs that I was really impressed with, I thought Tennessee did a good job. They got a couple of in-state guys, which is important. In the state of Tennessee, that's really important to start winning that state again. And it's a talented state to win. They also landed a kid that was a lot of people considered a lean to Alabama. And I thought that's sort of your statement get of the day. He was the number one junior college prospect in the country, a four-star kid. And I thought that getting the guy like that, especially as you're starting to transition your offense into a more pro-style, more physical downhill offense, that's important in that identity. Dan Mullen at Florida.
Oh, yeah, Florida, great class.
Definitely a winner there. Held his class together, moved up a little bit into the top 15, landed a four-star safety. He also landed, and really the gem was he got his quarterback, which is important because it's a dual-threat quarterback to step into a pro-style quarterback room and start to change that identity. So he got him, Emory Jones. He was committed to Ohio State, flipped to Florida, and he beat Willie Taggart in Florida State on him. So that was important. I thought Willie Taggart salvaged a day by landing Jaden Woodbee. He kind of showed what he could do there because Jaden Woodbee's out of California, out of Los Angeles. He was committed to Ohio State for over a year.
Jimbo's staff gave him nothing, right?
Yeah, he wouldn't have played with Jimbo. But, I mean, that was a kind of, I guess, a West Coast tie there that Willie was able to lean on. And
I thought it was because of Twitter. I thought it was because he did at FSU football and said, I don't have an offer. And then he got an offer.
I actually missed that. Is that what happened? That's great.
He was talking. It was like, it was somebody threw it in my face because I'm always on the team. Don't tweet at recruits, and he was on Twitter, a Florida State fan tweeted at him and was like, "Yo, we need you at Florida State football." And Jaden responded, he was like, "Well, at FSU football didn't even offer me. I would love to." A Florida State fan. And so somebody in the social media, and that was like, I think on December 11th, I think. So somebody in the Florida State social media department was like, we got to go on this right now.
Well, it was. I mean, and they offered on December 12th, I think.
Oh,
and
there you go.
And they got him on campus. And like that never happens. That never happens where a kid just takes a visit and has no previous relationship with the staff. And flips, and that's what happened. It was like a Hail Mary, and it worked. And so that salvaged their class, but they did. You know, they lost Emory Jones. They lost a kid decommit, went to South Carolina. So not an ideal week for Willie Taggart, but he had a tough hill to climb. As I've been talking here, I've sort of tried to rank these coaches and what they did right away. I'm gonna go Dan Mullen 1, Jeremy Pruitt 2, Scott Frost 3. I'm gonna go Matt Luke. Actually, I might go Matt Luke 3. Honestly, he did a pretty good job because they got Matt Corral a couple days ago. They were able to flip a kid, Elijah Moore from Georgia. They were able to flip a kid from Mississippi State on signing day.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
I mean, Ole Miss, especially considering their obviously obstacles right now, you got to throw him in there. So I'll go him 3, Nebraska 4, maybe Oregon 5. Just I'd say maybe Joe Moorhead 5. even though they did lose one to Tennessee late.
What about Jimbo? What's that Texas A&M class look like?
No. See, that's the thing. Like, Jimbo not a good day. He lost a commit that he may end up losing to Alabama. A couple guys that he had made a push for late, hoping they wouldn't sign and hold off until January, did sign with other schools. Jimbo did not have a great day. And now, granted, their class is still in striking distance. They signed a lot of the guys that they wanted to get on board. They're like 28th in the country. The early signing period was not great for him, and he'll have to still do some work here on the back end. But better than Chip Kelly, who lost two commits and didn't sign his quarterback yet, who is really kind of the gem of that class. Better than Chad Morris, who's sitting back there at like 84th in the country and hadn't been able to get anything done yet. Better than Herm Edwards, who's still trying to hire staff, and who's got a commit list that's sitting, trying to pull up their rank. They're 72nd in the country with 11 commits. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a lot of. I mean, none of these guys are in great shape. It's just this is the new landscape. None of these guys are in great shape, and it's just a huge challenge for all of them.
What about we're gonna see? You know, the Saquon Barkley era is over at Penn State. Penn State, the Rose Bowl season a year ago, Big Ten championship. This year they fall a little bit short, but still, like, we're going to go back and we're going to look at this little run as being pretty successful. Felt like Penn State, obviously getting Parsons. Yeah, getting Micah Parsons was the big headline, like the first big commit of the morning. But in general, as the day went on, I felt like I kept seeing Penn State slide up there a little bit. Feels like this is a moment or a class that James Franklin can hang his hat on and know that this is going to be sustained success at Nittany Lions, for the Nittany Lions, not just like the combination of Joe Moorhead, a couple good wide receivers, you know, Trace McSorley, you know, fitting in at the right spot, and of course a superhuman athlete in Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, they flipped a kid from UCLA as well, John Dotson. They got Micah Parsons. Micah Parsons is probably, he's a day one starter caliber guy. He's a freak. And I think you're right. Like, they're doing things from a talent standpoint that haven't really been done at Penn State in a long time. I mean, they've got 3 5 stars in this class right now. They got the number one all-purpose back in the country, number two. They got the number three wide receiver in the country, who's this kid, Justin Shorter, who's 6'4", 215, and runs like a 4.5. Just a gazelle, man.
Oh, man.
And then they got Micah Parsons that does everything on the field. Zach Kuntz, who's like a 6'7", 225-pound tight end that's just a mismatch. Like, they've got this is a really good class. And so that's one thing you had confidence in with James Franklin, is he was gonna elevate the talent level. He was going to recruit at a really high level. And so, yeah, like you were saying, no offense, Ricky Ronnie, but I don't care who the coordinator is. They're going to have enough talent to where they're going to be tough to defend. It's good. You know, they're recruiting too well for it to matter that much who their coordinators are and who their assistant coaches are. I mean, because James Franklin's now is at the point where he's having so much success that it's hard to hang on to his assistant coaches because they're getting promotions and they're getting jobs elsewhere. And so as long as James Franklin is there, they're going to bring in talent because that guy knows recruiting and he's passionate about it and he's good at it.
The Clemson Tigers, as I was reviewing the last like 5 years or so and sort of figuring out ways to talk about and break down this class, it's, because you have absurd talent, sometimes I step back and I think that it might be missed that when it comes to the recruiting rankings, Clemson's made it to 3 straight college football playoff, not with top 5, top 10 classes, right?
Yes. But that is important to make a distinction here. Clemson, the reason they don't have top 5, top 15 classes is... Or top
they do. Yeah, they do. They have almost consistently been at like 15, 14. Like them breaking into the top 10 by getting four of the top 10 players with this very small class. Like what do they think it ended up being, like 16, 17, 18 guys?
Right. They've got I think 15 guys in this class right now. They had 14 last year. So among those 14 commits they had what, like nine of them were four or five star commits.
Yeah.
You know, so they in 2016, they had 21 enrollees, still not even a full class. You know, in 2015, I'll pull up, see what they had there. They had, 24. That's more of a, like, that's a little bit closer to a full class, but, and they're in the top 10 that year. Like this is just how Clemson does it. That's why Clemson, the better indicator there for their talent is the team talent composite, where you look at how much talent is actually retained on the roster.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't lose these guys. They don't process them. They don't send them packing if they don't live up to the hype. And usually they develop the guys that don't live up to it by the time they're seniors. And so Clemson has been like, don't let the rankings fool you on Clemson. Like they recruit at such a high level, and they, what's so impressive about Clemson is how successful they are on their plan A guys. They don't move to plan B. They land their plan A guys. And so they don't really even need to typically go out of region very much, because they don't need to, like, their hit rate is absurd. And so, Clemson's doing, I mean, and to bring this back to this week, they landed the number three weak side defensive end in the country, five-star defensive end, KJ Henry, and they got the number one offensive tackle in the country, and Jackson Carman, who's out of Ohio, who Ohio State wanted. So Dabo he's one of the dons of this thing. He's got it figured out as well, and I think Clemson, just like we were talking about Georgia earlier, like they're showing no signs of slowing down. They're going to continue to be college football playoff team.
Both of those schools can be a national brand, but almost don't need to be because of the demographics of where the talent is for college football or for high school football in the country.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, okay. Like KJ Henry, he's only about a 2-hour drive up north. We're gonna head up to Winston-Salem. We're gonna go get him out of West Forsyth. Like, oh, we're gonna just go. Like, obviously they're fighting over the same kids, and you're talking about the state of Georgia. But I was trying to see if I was gonna make a big deal out of Jackson Carman, but even still, the demographics of Clint, like he is still, as an out of region player, it's a huge win for Dabo Swinney and his staff, but still, the makeups of these classes are almost all in the region.
Well, I mean, you're on it. I mean, that's a great point, in that when I go out and I'm in like camps in Texas or Vegas or something, and you ask kids, hey, who do you want an offer from? Who had an offer you hope and will? Clemson is a popular answer everywhere you go. And yet they don't even really try to tap into that, because they don't have to. Because they're so good at hitting on the guys who are in their backyard. And that's because that, look, if you're Kirby Smart at Georgia and you monopolize the state every year, you don't need to go out. Like, that's, you don't need to go to California. Alabama is a little bit more, has a little more necessity to do that, because you just can't. I mean, Alabama's, they got talent there, and there's talent in Tennessee, and there's talent next door, certainly in Georgia. As a next door neighbor, but Alabama has to get out a little bit more, and they have to try to get a foothold in Texas and California and some places, and they've done that, and that's part of why they've been able to continue to keep trucking into number one classes.
All right, as we start to look ahead to the February signing period, where are the schools or the teams that you think either can make big moves in terms of improving their class, or who do you think, even and sort of packaged into this, who needs to, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, all those new coaches do. I think Texas A&M is one that's got to make a move. I think that, you know, obviously Florida State, they're 45th in the country right now with, what, 9 commits. So in sort of the non-new coach division, as I look at the rankings, I mean, LSU is probably the one that's the most glaring to me.
Wow.
They're 15th in the country. They were sitting here on Friday morning, on Friday evening, Terrace Marshall, the number one wide receiver in the country, probably commits to LSU, so that'll help him out a little bit.
He's from Louisiana, but, right?
And he's a Louisiana kid, yeah. and he's trying to hold off, or he's you know, A&M is trying to make a final push. But if they don't do that, or I mean, let's just say they do, but either way, like right now, as we sit here today, right now, you got to go down to 190th. In the 24/7 Sports composite rankings before you find an LSU commit. That's just we are not used to seeing that. And LSU, I think, especially given the new hires and how competitive the SEC West is and how Ed Orgeron was hired to recruit, like that was the one constant, the given. Like, all right, the given in this equation is Ed Orgeron can recruit. All right, now what about the rest? Who are your coordinators going to be? Well, okay, now here we are. We're used to seeing LSU in the top five, and they're not up there. And so they've got Terrace Marshall. They've got Patrick Surtain Jr., the number one cornerback in the country. That's a leaned LSU right now. But now you got, Florida State. Willie Taggart is desperate for some good news. You've got Alabama that just lost a cornerback to Georgia in this late cycle or early cycle. And Alabama, that's a high priority for them as defensive backs that can play. So they're going to reprioritize Surtain. So there's going to be a lot of competition for that kid. So I'm interested to see what LSU can accomplish. USC's down at 23rd right now, but they'll make a run. Just that's the way USC operates. I think then you sort of just got your typical all the other schools that are really need the biggest action relative to where we're used to seeing them are those new coaches.
Mm. Big stuff. Barton, great work this week. Y'all killed it, 24/7 Sports. I hope everyone has followed, signed up for VIP, and given all of their monies to the good people at 24/7 Sports for all of your hard work. You can follow Barton at Barton Simmons. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. We will be back next week, as we said, with another edition of the Locks Pod. We did not end up picking the Gasparilla Bad Boy Mowers Bowl. But my fade Butch Davis play would have worked out nicely.
Jose. I'm glad we do. And I think I might have picked FIU. So my lack of a feel for these low-level games is still struggling.
Hey, we're about to exit the Fernelli Arena and enter the big boy world.
Look out. Here we come.
All right. Thanks, Martin.